When you look at our debt over time, one of the biggest concerns is when you look at the ratio of the U.S. debt versus GDP. Now, when you look at 1989, it wasn't such a big deal because in 1989, it was 39% of GDP. Now, you fast forward to 2019, 79%, our debt is 79% of GDP. And then you fast forward to 2020, which this has just been a very tough year. I don't discount COVID-19. I don't want to discuss it anymore because it's become its own religion. It seems like logic in many ways has just been thrown out the window. But I think everyone can agree is that when you shut down all these entities and money stops flowing, it is creating a huge impact economically on this country and throughout the world.
You're listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.
Hi, this is Ken Green, the host of the Engineer of Finance podcast, and I have a short episode for you today talking about the topic. Oh, here's the topic. Debt is bad. So a lot of families that come to work with me, it's a very consistent theme, very driven, strong savers, and the ones that aren't want to learn how to change their cash flow problems. And I think a lot of people listen to the show that if they had a choice for being in debt or being debt-free, most people would be, I want to be debt-free. And I'll make fun of myself. I don't like being in debt to others. It's something I fight with on a consistent basis. Now, it's not a daily thing. Now, it's probably more like a monthly, quarterly thing. And I've talked about on previous episodes that talking about the importance of living in the spread. And we'll talk about how where debt can be very good in this episode, in my opinion, how it can be really good. And it's proven. It works. But you get zero. You negotiate the best price on a refrigerator or a washer and dryer, and then you can get 12 to 18 months 0% interest. I mean, that is a great example of taking advantage of debt. Yet, I fight that on a consistent basis where I just want to pay it off. I'm a big proponent of 30-year mortgages versus a 15-year fixed mortgage. Now, for most scenarios, a 30-year fixed mortgage creates is a more powerful strategy for a lot of families. Now, there's exceptions. And if anyone ever wants to see that in person or like a video where I show that there is no difference of paying cash for a house or paying for a 15-year mortgage or having a 30-year mortgage, when you look at opportunity costs and there's an assumption that all the interest rates between what you're investing in or your loan is at the same interest rate, there is no difference. They all have the exact same opportunity costs. And so I'd be more than happy to show that because when I work with families and show them how money works and understanding opportunity costs, all of a sudden this, and this is very driven. A lot of people have 15-year mortgages or just want to pay cash for everything. They just don't want to pay all that interest to someone else. I get it. It's a real strong drive for wanting to be debt-free, not wanting to waste all that money and pay it to some other entity. But when you understand opportunity costs and you understand money, being in debt can be a very powerful strategy. But let me talk about examples of bad. And then I went on a tangent, but you know, I have a 30-year fixed mortgage. There's a part of me that you see that interest being paid to others. And even though I understand the math and science and logic of why we have as part of our financial strategy for our family, a 30-year fixed mortgage, there's still a temptation to want to pay it off. It's crazy. The 0% is even more crazy. So, but that's where you have to balance logic and emotion. I know logically as a financial strategy, it makes no sense to pay off a 0% loan. When you understand, look at real estate and how to negotiate terms working with families, people buying and selling properties, understanding the spread and 0% loans, very, very powerful. And so I'll get to the good part of debt, but let me just pound on the bad part a little bit. Some great references, some information I'm going to share, has come from some really great websites. I mean, if you go to heritage.org, the Heritage Foundation, I think they have a lot of great information about our government and our debt, a lot of great information on our U.S. debt. And then also another great website to go to is the Peter G. Peterson Foundation. So I want to make sure I was saying it right. They have some great information about the U.S. debt. And several episodes I mentioned during the Reagan administration, how he was president. If you look back in history and reading the history of this country through money and how money flows is very interesting. And you can see how it drives a lot of politics. It drives a lot of things. And if you go back to 1981, and this has come from treasurydirect.gov, the U.S. debt at September 30th of 1981, interesting enough, it's September, was just under $1 trillion. Fast forward 8 years later, 1929 of 1989, it was just under $3 trillion, $2.9 trillion. Now you fast forward to today, and per the Peter G. Peterson Foundation, that's hard to say, our U.S. debt is at $26.8 trillion, just under $27 trillion. Now, I would argue that amount of debt is a problem. The more and more our Federal Reserve, when I say our, I don't mean our government, we don't own it, is a private entity. And I'm not going to go down the rabbit trail discussing that today. But when the Federal Reserve creates more and more money, and our nation gets further and further in debt, and we have all the money we have. Now, the other argument is, well, we need to pay off all the debt. Well, if we pay off all the debt, guess what? There's no money in circulation based upon our current monetary system. That won't work. But when you take our dollars that we're holding, and if you look at a dollar, I'm just pulling up a dollar bill right now, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. And so the more money that you have sitting electronically or physically in your hand, that's more energy, that's more options, that creates more certainty, especially when it's liquid and not tied up for decades in different qualified plans. When I say qualified plans, government enticement plans like 401ks and IRAs, they have their place. But we have the Federal Reserve creating more and more money, and now there's discussion of creating even more of it. When you go from $3 trillion in 1989 and you almost times it by 10 now, that really devalues our purchasing power. Our dollars are worth a lot less. Now, an extreme example, if you just want to keep the math easy, although this isn't completely accurate, that's like you got $100 and we have 10 times the money in circulation through U.S. debt. That means it's worth 1/10 of what it was. That is the largest form of taxation, I would argue hidden taxation ever. So although we're in a historic tax low when we look at our income tax rates, but when you see the inflation, which is creating more and more and more money, creating more and more U.S. debt, which is creating less and less purchasing power for our dollars, that is a huge hidden taxation. And I think it's important that more and more media, which they don't, should start talking about it and educating all of everyone in this country, all of us, about the importance. You know, this should be the biggest thing that's keeping people up at night, in my opinion, what are we going to do to wipe out the debt? This needs to be a big discussion. We need to hold our politicians, our leaders in the House and the Senate, right? Congress, all of them accountable. Like, what are we going to do to solve the problem? And so I'll say it one more time. Peter G. Peterson Foundation, I'll have it in my show notes. Heritage Foundation, I think some great areas to go start learning more about our U.S. debt and potential solutions. Now, The Peter Peterson Foundation has a very interesting comment about when you look at our debt over time, one of the biggest concerns is when you look at the ratio of the U.S. debt versus GDP. Now, when you look at 1989, it wasn't such a big deal because in 1989, it was 39% of GDP. Now, you fast forward to 2019, 79%, our debt is 79% of GDP. And then you fast forward to 2020, which this has just been a very tough year. I don't discount COVID-19. I don't want to discuss it anymore because it's become its own religion. It seems like logic in many ways has just been thrown out the window. But I think everyone can agree is that when you shut down all these entities and money stops flowing, it is creating a huge impact economically on this country and throughout the world. And 81% of GDP is our debt. You fast forward to 2025, interestingly, when our new tax law sunset, 89%. You fast forward all the way to 2050, it's 180% of GDP. That is not sustainable. So when you understand these numbers and math doesn't lie, something drastic will have to change. So that's an incredibly good example of why debt can be devastating and really bad. So what's the solution? Now, I argue a lot of families don't like the word budget because it indicates constraint. It indicates there's things you just can't do. That's quite the natural response. But people are savvy with money. And I've never liked the word, you know, prior to getting this industry, the word budget. But what gets measured gets managed. And when you just flip the script and you just look at it through a different prism, like a different paradigm, and realize that don't call it debt, just call it, or a budget, call it an opportunity fund. Me, who's naturally frugal, although I never liked the word budget prior to getting this industry, once I realized that this is just a great opportunity fund that gives me permission to spend strategically and enjoy the use of my money today, but then also create a potential for a way wealthier tomorrow, then this budget now is just one big fund. It's like your opportunity fund. You're just measuring and managing money in a strategic way. You're not going to get every year everything you want, but you're going to get a lot more of what you want than just what you need if you have a budget, if you manage the flow of your money. Now, I would say families that businesses get it, they understand budget. Now, when I would say the families that are adverse to the word budget and individuals, I would argue our government really hates that word budget. That's why they fail to create one every year, it seems like forever, which should be their number one responsibility or top three. I'll mention the top two: protect us, get out of our way, and let us embrace free enterprise, and then have a national budget. You know, we can't provide everything we want, but that's real hard for politicians because then they can't buy more and more votes. But something profound is going to have to change. So I didn't mean to go on talk about this example of bad debt for so long. And I'll talk about some solutions to this, not on this episode, but some future episodes of what could be done. The government is going to have to live within its means. It's not sustainable. Something big and profound will occur if it's not addressed soon. Some other examples. Boy, I spent way too much time on that. But I hope that's valuable. Here's some other examples of debt. Credit cards, I would argue, could be great. This could be good debt. I mean, if you're able to negotiate credit cards and get all these points and take advantage of flow and 0% rates for 6 months to a year, et cetera, then switch it to another card. I don't waste too much time for me personally on those strategies, but I have clients who are really good at it and listeners of the show. Credit cards, despite what some of the financial entertainers out there say, can be very, very powerful to use. You just have to have, and it's not even that much discipline, you just got to have systems in place that you always pay those things off in full every month. Even if now 0%, you got the minimum. But my point is this, you just don't want that interest working against you. So here's where it becomes bad. 18, 20, 30% interest rates. I'm exaggerating a little bit on the 30, but 27, 28, that's pretty bad. That's brutal. And so if you're out there and I've talked about the spread, I'll have in the show notes episodes to go back to learn about what I mean about the spread for new listeners of the show. When you are chasing investment returns of 7-8%, if you look at the S&P 500 without dividends, that index has created 5% since inception, right about there, without dividends. With dividends right now, right around 10%. We'll see how the end of this year pans out. But right now, it's hovering right around 10%. That wasn't reality a few years ago. If you're chasing rates of return of 10%, let's say that in this example, and you have a credit card that you're paying 28%, you're going backwards at a rapid rate. You're losing. That's an example of bad debt. Mortgages, I would argue, right now, having the ability to get interest rates. I mean, this is per bankrate.com. I just pulled this up. 30-year fixed rates, national average appears to be about 3.01%. 15-year, 2.48%. That is almost, I don't want to say free money, but that is an incredibly low interest rate. And so if you have the ability to lock in a fixed payment each month and a known cash flow, that allows you to leverage your money into other areas that can create higher returns, 5-6%. That is a great use of debt. Now, if you're not taking that money and you don't have it invested anywhere else, then maybe you're better off just paying cash for a house if you have the ability to do so. But, you know, paying $500,000 in cash for a house and you're getting a 3% rate over 30 years, and you can instead of paying cash, you have that $500,000 that you can leverage into solid investment, solid investments, right? That's the hard part, finding those, but they exist. And you can leverage into contracts, or you're getting cash flow 7-9%, right? Or if you there's a gambler in you and you want to invest in the stock market and chase some in certain areas and chase phenomenal rates of return, it's probably better to do the 30-year mortgage and then go leverage that $500,000 to other investments, and then use the cash flow through those investments to pay your mortgage each month, and then you have all this extra money left over. So that's a good example of how mortgages can be very powerful. That is good debt. Debt is, I don't want to say debt is good, but debt can be really good. Now just talk about, I've made this joke in the past, I don't know if I've said it on my show, but I've talked about this with families and small businesses, is that people who are very fixated on being debt-free, and I get it. I mean, that is true financial freedom. It sure feels like it. If you had your house completely paid off, you own all your cars outright, I mean, you don't owe anything to anyone else. I mean, that feels really good. Now, the reality though is you pay off your house in full, guess what? You still get a reminder from your state and county that do you really own that house? Or you're just leasing it from the government, because you're going to get hit with, it seems like on average, like here in the state of Nevada, and kind of similar across other states, 1% of what that house is worth. So if your property and structure is $500,000, you're probably paying, like in Nevada, California area, not accounting for Prop 13, 1% of $500,000, you're shelling out $5,000 a year, right? Just a little bit over $400 a month to have that property. So you're not debt-free. You still have an energy bill, right? You still have to do maintenance on the property. So money's still flowing out, but I get it that peace of mind. So 401ks, a lot of people to save on income taxes will pump a lot of money into these tax-deferred vehicles, like 401ks, because they want to lower their taxes and simultaneously want to be debt-free. Well, guess what? 20, 30 years from now, you've been pumping it into these IRAs and 401ks and these other tax-deferred vehicles that are thrown up by the financial industry and the government. Now you go into retirement, you've wiped out your mortgages, you're debt-free, except guess what? You're not debt-free, because you have this huge tax liability, this huge tax mortgage that is owed to the government. And a few moments ago, I harped on how really bad debt, $27 trillion, and you look at a percentage of GDP, that's a problem. What do you think is going to happen to our tax rates 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now? So if you have a whole bunch of money in 401ks, great job. You've done a great job based upon how we've been educated. But it's important to understand that is a big tax mortgage waiting. A couple other things I wanted to talk about bad debt, good debt. Yeah, I don't know if it was this monologue's a lot longer than I anticipated. I should say not a couple other things. I think the only other thing I just want to address to show how to really ingrain embracing the philosophy of how debt can be very powerful. If you look at how the banking industry under our fractional banking mechanism, how they make money, and not even under fractional banking, just living off the spread, is that now, of course, with Federal Reserve talking about essentially 0% interest rates now for the next 3 years, we'll see what happens. You know, these quote unquote high yield bank accounts that were paying over 2% last year, now they're hovering less than 1%, 0.8%, 0.6%. And then if you look at your typical brick and mortar banks, you know, they've always been hovering at 0 to 0.1% forever anyway. But you get a bank I'll just use some of the ones I use. I use like Chase and Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank. Chase gives me nothing. U.S. Bank gives me nothing. Wells Fargo, actually, I just closed down Wells Fargo. I've had them for over a decade. They offer me 0.1%, right? So you take 100 grand, throw it in with your bank, and they're giving you 0.1%. And I've talked about in the past about the importance of passive income and how that creates financial independence. a tenth of a percent on 100 grand, you're making $100 a year in passive income, but then also you're going to get a 1099 a miscellaneous form where you have to pay taxes on that. So if you're at a 20% or 25%, we'll use 25% effective tax rate. Well, that 100, you got to take out the 25 bucks, hand it over to the government, and you're left over 75. But what are they doing with your 100 grand, right? This is a powerful example of why debt can be used so well to your advantage and take advantage of the leverage. Wells Fargo is on the hook to pay you a tenth of a percent. They owe you $100, but they let it go out and lend it to your neighbor so she can go buy a Tesla, right? At which, by the way, total tangent, I was really excited about hearing what Elon Musk was going to say on battery day, and it was just a lot of buildup and overpromise, and yet another, for me, a disappointment. I've mentioned in previous episodes how I just absolutely love electric motors. They're fast. I love them. They're brilliant. The weak link has always been the battery side. And maybe I'll do an episode where I talk about, hey, what's the end game here? Despite what a lot of people believe, there's a lot of pollution involved with batteries too. Where's all that waste going to go when those batteries are depleted? And so it's always been the weak link, is I'm just craving for some new brilliant nanotechnology on the battery side to solve that weak link. And it would be a huge game changer. And I was really hoping that would be announced at the most recent battery day, but maybe next year, or maybe something, who knows. But anyway, talking about lending that $100,000 to your neighbor so she can go out and buy a Tesla at, say she gets an interest-only rate for this example at 4.1%. This is a powerful use of debt. The Wells Fargo owes you a tenth of a percent. They do a guarantee, they do a contract where your neighbor, she signs, and she's getting whose money? Other people's money. Your money for that $100,000 loan. You take that 4.1 minus the 0.1%, and Wells Fargo is netting 4% on that transaction. That is a powerful use of leveraging debt. Two parties in debt, Wells Fargo in debt to you, and then your neighbor in debt to Wells Fargo, and they win on that equation. So if you can master that strategy, which is what I teach families when I work with them one-on-one, and this is what I teach on and webinars as well and workshops, and you take advantage of the spread, and you take advantage and use debt in your favor, being debt-free is not, but the banks have proven why being in debt is a very powerful strategy when you leverage it into those type of contracts, auto loans, mortgages, etc. Now, when they go gamble in the stock market, that's a different scenario. I would argue that's not their sweet spot in many ways. But that's it. Is debt debt is bad? Not necessarily. I mean, debt can be really bad. I've given some great examples, I think, on where debt can be is a real problem, especially our U.S. debt and credit cards, etc. But then also understand that debt is good. Debt can really be good if it is implemented appropriately and strategically with your financial strategies. Everyone, I hope this has been a five-star episode. If it hasn't, please let me know what I can do to make it a five-star show. I want to create a lot of value for everyone, and the ratings are important to me, and just creating a lot of value is very important to me, and doing it for free. And so if there's topics and ideas that you'd like me to discuss, please reach out to me and ask me to talk about it. I'd be more than happy to. And also, please go to my website, engineeroffinance.com. I'm going to have more and more blogs coming out, and I'm looking to do some transcriptions. So for all these episodes and the newsletters I put out, that they'll be available on the website as well. And that is engineeroffinance.com. Thank you so much. I just absolutely love doing the show. I'm so grateful for everyone that listens, and I look forward to next week's episode. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.